Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
Welcome everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Khoury. I'm your presenter for today. And the session today is really about placemaking, which is possibly a new term to some people. But before we proceed with the session itself, I'd just like to make a couple of announcements. Grey Power is meeting in Blockhouse Bay regularly now, and our next meeting is on the 2nd of November at 1 o'clock. So that's our first Friday's sessions. And it's about scams and advanced care planning and enduring power of attorney. So if you have an interest in those topics, please come along. That's 524 Blockhouse Bay Road, and all the buses in town end up there virtually, so it's pretty easy to get to, and there's parking at the back of the building. And we'll also have an announcement about the in-trust elections. So if you haven't voted, or you've voted and haven't posted it, please get on with it, because you need to have stuff in the mail by the 23rd of October in order to have your vote count. And it's pretty important this time because of the infighting amongst the current trustees, and there is a very good team operating that will make an excellent new team. One of our members is standing, Richard Leckinger, and I'm sure that if you read your literature around that's come in the mail with your voting papers, you will see that there's some very good people standing. So we encourage you to vote and get on with it. Now, today's session, placemaking, has come about because Auckland Council is doing a placemaking week and has been involved in bringing people here from overseas who've got international experience, and also local people who are leading things, and bringing them all together to have conversations. So with me in the studio is Frith Walker, the manager of placemaking from Pānuku. Pānuku, of course, being the commercial arm of Auckland Council. And we have also with us Ethan Kent from New York, who's involved with a project for public spaces. So welcome, Ethan, and welcome, Frith.
Good afternoon. Good to see you.
Thank you. Cheers.
Yeah, so this is going to be a conversation which we have had in various sessions over the last few days. But it's also a conversation that we're broadening out to the community, and we're hoping that people will see this in the framework of empowering communities, so that people are better prepared for the intense development that's going on in Auckland City, which has started already but has not really come to fruition yet, but will do so in the next few years. So to kick off, how would you describe placemaking for us?
Tēnā koe, and thank you so much for having us here. It's really exciting. I think this might be my first radio interview, so it's really lovely to say hello to all of your listeners out there. I think it's a really notoriously broad and wonderfully difficult thing to explain, and my favourite joke is that my name is commonly misconstrued for Firth, so placemaking in Firth just sounds like hardware. But I completely understand that it's the opposite, and Ethan said a great definition of it, which was very beautiful and succinct, so I'll let him take that one. But one thing I've written down that he said the other day was, we need placemaking to be a tool for connecting the heart with the hard infrastructure. So for me, it's about remembering that the reason we build environments is because of people, so making sure that people are central to those, the planning of those environments, and then how they're effectively made at the end of the day.
That's a very, very good way to look at it.
So it's my day job, and I've made my way in from theatre, so I often think about stages and performers and audiences and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's making sure we've got human beings happy, safe and well in the environments we're making for them.
And theatre isn't theatre without the people.
It's not, yeah, it's pretty dull when it's just you and the cast, yep.
Ethan, what's your take on placemaking? How do you do it succinctly for us?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think placemaking is an ongoing conversation on how we all best work together to shape the shared places in our communities. So it's something we're all learning how to do better, and ideally it's a healthy debate. We think that the focus on small activations, on small improvements to public spaces, really grounds people in their shared goals, and the process of working together to shape these places is really core to larger community building efforts. But we also think that it's these places and how they reflect the identity and culture of a community that are and most powerful in accomplishing a whole range of other goals for communities, from health to equity to sustainability, and economic growth and so forth. But placemaking, it's something we're learning from all around the world. People are leading on placemaking from many different sectors. There's activism from many causes. There's private sector people that are doing placemaking. There's community activists. And we've been really excited in New Zealand to see really unheard of leadership from the council, from Panuku, from government leaders as well, which we don't have actually as much in the U.S.
Thank you. And I'm thinking myself about the exercise that I was involved in, taking out the guide that came from your project, Ethan.
Yeah.
We took it out and we actually sat in the, or was stood and also sat at various points around Aotea Square and had a look at, you know, what makes the square tick. How do people move through the space? Can they find adequate signage? Are there drinking fountains? How did it appear to us? Was it really a place that was attractive? And I guess because I've been to a lot of things there that were really great things to attend, like the 125th anniversary of suffrage, the wild party, and wonderful singing and wonderful dancing, and, you know, the square was full.
Yeah.
And it was a very positive experience. And that was a recent experience. But over the course of doing the exercise, I began to see that it was too grey, too colourless. There weren't any interesting plants. There wasn't enough greenery. And there wasn't any scented gardens or any colourful flower beds. There could have been, but there weren't. There were all sorts of things that would have made a difference. And perhaps more seating, more comfortable seating. I know during the Readers and Writers Festival week, there were some very comfortable seats out there. I know the council does put things out for events, and during event time, it can be quite colourful, but the rest of the time, it's very drab. I also thought, as I walked through the same space to a meeting just yesterday, I thought, well, wouldn't it be neat to have buskers on the grass during the lunch break? Because a lot of people were out in the square yesterday because it was sunny and it was lunchtime. And yet it still had all the disadvantages that I had noticed when I'd gone out with Ethan and others to do on work on the exercise.
Mm.
So that was my first introduction to a formal working on this. But in working on a local board, one is always conscious of the values in the community and how they're being expressed, and in particular what the tangata whenua might want to say about things and have said, and what the children are saying when they get involved in doing artwork in a park, when they're painting on stumps in a project along the creek, as they have done in our area in Pukitapapa. All these dimensions of values, of expression, of art and culture, and how people see themselves in the space, that's all sort of stuff that I work with on the local board, with most of the projects that we do outdoors in parks and things, because that's our responsibility, is to reflect the values of the community. So placemaking is very much part of my work, but I'm also thinking about placemaking as sense of culture and connection with spirituality. So how do you draw strength from a place, and how do you get sustenance from being in that space? Where do you find your special place, your sanctuary? Because people need that kind of experience in open space, particularly more and more as everything gets more intense and density increases. There are more people living in the surrounding areas, more people crowded onto public transport and onto the road corridors and so on. It just becomes more of an effort to get everywhere and do everything. So having places that people can go, where they can rejuvenate, and they don't have backyards that they can contemplate under trees in their own space at home, so they need that in a public environment. So that's my concept of placemaking at the moment, but it's very much a developing space.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I love that. And I think we're sort of having these recurring conversations across the council family about trying to define it. And then 2 hours later, we all agree that that's probably not a good idea because it's such a complex thing and it means so many personal things to so many different people. And I think I'm halfway between Bill Reid and Ethan Kent here, but we're quite complex creatures, us human beings. So maybe it's okay to accept that some of our processes are that complex and there's no way to simplify them. Making a place that makes a person happy is a deeply complex and personal conversation.
Yes, and a symbol to one group can be a thorn in the side of another group. Yeah. And so there's a marvellous bridge in Puketapapa leading into a park, and that bridge is known as the Eel Trap Bridge because it's actually designed like an ancient Māori eel trap. Mm. It's quite a giant structure and metal. It's quite imposing. And to some people, they don't like it. It's really something that they think is horrible and shouldn't be there. But to a lot of Māori, it's like, there's something in the park that represents us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we feel at home here. And then I talk to the African communities, and we have 18 African groups in a space of 10 Ks. So it's fairly concentrated, this cultural diversity we're talking about in this area. And the Africans say, well, you know, we're a very colourful culture, or cultures, plural, and we used to very bright colours, and I see their fashion shows are fantastic. But, you know, we don't see that portrayed anywhere externally. Mm. So in Avondale, they've done a project where they've actually commissioned bright colours to go onto walls and panels, and yes, I think
we know about that one.
That's right. I think some people are beginning to get that idea, but it seems like that would fit very well in the Puketapapa area. But I haven't yet seen a place that might suit that. It's kind of like finding the right spot where it's just going to fit. and I guess also just working with the architecture students and talking about what's been happening in the Indigenous communities in Auckland, that's been really a fantastic conversation because the Samoan students that have been nurtured through the architecture school have been involved with Roots, the group that's made buildings out of plastic bottles. And they've got involved the schools and the communities and the markets. And then they're doing a fantastic community garden at the moment for the family services project in Manurewa. And, Māngere. Mm. But, yeah, they've also come up with this concept of Mo for the Mo studio. Mm. And this concept of Mo actually shows about the connection across the Pacific because it's a fairly universal concept. And in Māori, it's your connectivity to the life force, Māori. But in Samoan culture, it's the products that come out of the earth. Mm. So through the life cycle, all these rich treasures come through the plant world and so on. So it's healing through plants. And I guess really Motonu in Māori is a very catchy phrase, but it's a phrase that's used in very strong activist waiata. It's about hanging on to what's really essential, not giving up. So the concept of Mo, I think, is something that young people can really identify with. And so what will be interesting is to see how this evolves as a theme to connect people with placemaking, to connect people with actually building structures that reflect their communities and their community's need for expression. And I guess there's lots of opportunity in Auckland because of the development that's going on to have these conversations. And I think this is what's so exciting about placemaking, that it's a process and it's not going to be owned by any one group. right. something that everybody can get involved in.
Definitely, yeah. No, it's a process of defining placemaking, and it really is a process because too much cities have been too defined by projects, by sort of plopping down different buildings, even public spaces, even well-intentioned ones have been too defined as something you deliver to a community, not a process that you support a community in to building their capacity and programming spaces themselves and in defining them themselves. And it's an ongoing process, one that's never finished. We see, you know, if any one use or user group dominates the you know, a public space or the process, it limits it to an extent. So our focus is always to make sure placemaking is as centered in communities, in places as possible, and that you're always looking at, you know, you go with where there's some leadership in a community, but you're always looking at who else can you bring in. And we find that, you know, that New Zealanders and, you know, Aucklanders are set up to do this as anywhere. There's people that are really passionate about their places and preserving them, bringing in new energy. You all have great roots around the world in places that you love. And then, of course, the Maori culture brings a, you know, really an unmatched connection to place and, you know, and a connection around community that is anchored and grows from place, that, you know, is so powerful. I mean, it's wonderful that it's being, you know, there's more and more Maori names being respected and of course it's being reflected in the architecture, but there's also the sort of storied culture, the processes, the relational culture of the Maori is something that can continually be built upon, I think, to really define placemaking in a unique way here.
And for us, you've been observing while you've been involved in these various sessions. So you have people that you know, and then there are people that you're new to the process with. Mm. So what are your deepest reflections over the last few days? Things that have really come through to you about this process?
Yeah, sorry for jumping in. I'm so excited. Trying to make notes really quietly. I was just thinking about the Aotea Centre and the fact that building's currently shut. It's that the major structure on Aotea Square is closed for a refurbishment, which is wonderful. That's a brilliant thing to be happening to that building. But there's usually there is a team of people who care about Aotea Square who run it. Awesome, dedicated, zealous nuts, as Ethan might say. Mm-hmm. And they're not there at the moment. So that's a very subtle thing that those people are not looking over that square at the moment. And we had this experience of it feeling a bit like it wasn't cared for or something. So I think there's one thought about this process being so fine-tuned, so gentle, so cautious and careful. And how do you bring that level of thinking into what is sometimes a major building going into a place or a really significant roading change? That's one thing, but that's I think my key thought that's rolling around getting to listen to Ethan and Neil McEnroy and all of the people that we've been working with is the idea that we need to be thinking about how our systems are fitting together. So yes, public space is an incredibly important conversation, but it's an important conversation because it supports us being good citizens and being good to each other in public space. Yeah. And so what are the structures that you need around that conversation to make sure that is being delivered tangibly on the ground, because our systems aren't really working for us as humans at this point in time is one of the conversations we've been having. Yeah. So there's this brave level of we really care about the city. We really, really want all people to flourish here. So my organisation has these three pillars of commercial, as you said, public realm and placemaking. Those are the three things that we try to deliver to the city. So just being able to think, as Ethan's saying, this is going to take all of us. This isn't any one person's department, and there's people who need to lead and people that need to do, but it's the coming together that makes the change. It's us operating together for the city, I think.
That's a really interesting way of putting it, because one of the things that I hear a lot of is Auckland Council's too siloed, and certainly in my experience trying to have conversations about placemaking or related matters to do with values or thinking about different sectors of the population, you know, wondering people working on a project at AT or through a park, creek change program where they're developing the creek and daylighting it, dealing with stormwater. How have they related to certain sectors in the community? If they're putting seating in, will the seating suit older people? Mm. Will they be able to get out of it easily? Mm. All sorts of small conversations, but vitally important, that need to go on. And somebody's got to start them. So this responsibility can actually percolate through all levels and all layers and all silos and can actually unite people across silos.
Yeah, no, we see
Hallelujah. Place
is a way to turn everything upside down to get it right side up. But it's a comfortable way to do that. It's a way that, and that's what we're definitely seeing. I agree, there are big silos within the Auckland Council, but that's true across the world, and that's a limiting factor for placemaking. But place is a very comfortable way to break down these silos and then reground the placemaking process in communities. There's lots of ways to seed that. So I think, Panuku's been wonderful in seeding it with activation and then showing how that can drive demand for investment and change on the terms of local communities. Because we think the best way to prevent your community from changing for the worse is actually to have a vision, a proactive vision for what you want, and to start building that in a very visible way in your shared public spaces.
Mm. One thing I've noticed about what Panuku's done down on the waterfront is the deck chairs and the library books and in the shed. That space, I think, has been really quite amazing in that it's terribly people-centred. It speaks to everyone. It gives opportunity to everyone. And people just can just sit and relax. They can just say, well, my body doesn't feel like we're walking any further, and they can just stop and chill out. And that sort of thing is really important, I think, to older people as they get around the city. I mean, quite often they have to walk too far before they find a seat. So having spaces like this that are really welcoming just breaks up the concrete expanse.
Definitely, yeah. In fact, there's studies that have shown that actually what drives, especially older men, actually to walk is not just a place to sit, but destinations, places they can go and be around other people. And so just having walkable infrastructure or even seating isn't enough. It's these places where that are social and where you can connect with people, you can watch people, make eye contact, smile at people. Those are very important moments for all of us. It's not that expensive to create these places. It's the more informal places where people relax and make connections, create memories, share memories. Mm-hmm. Cities haven't been doing that very well. They haven't been creating those kinds of places. So it's wonderful to see, right at their water's edge, what Panuku's done with these places, and to show how simple it is, but how that's reinventing Auckland's identity and how it's showcased to the world at that water's edge.
Mm. It might be the story behind that library, if it's okay to tell you a story, because Ethan's been reminding me that the intent we put behind these projects is really important. If we do these projects with love in our heart, then they're going to be better received by the audience than if we maybe do it out of grumpiness. So we always try, all of the wonderful people I work with at Panuku, we are always acutely aware of putting love into everything. But that project was delivered by a really wonderful person called Marika Newman, and it was actually done through a collaborative effort through the council family. So all the books were provided by the library, books that were no longer going to be in circulation, and a call out to our office in terms of anyone who had books that they'd like to donate. And I think the original setup cost us the grand total of $60. And it's been there for 6 years now, I think, and I don't have a resource consent for it. But these wonderful stories of locals who deal with depression, who come and get a book and books turning up all by themselves, and is this a cyclic thing that looks after itself? And that's marvellous. And that intent seems to be the most important part of it. It was a generous act by a generous person, and that's being returned in spades.
And indeed, even when I think about the plastic bottle structures that have been made. that have cost next to nothing. But the way in which they've become greenhouses, they've become generative spaces that have allowed people to gift plants and gift seeds and seedlings and so on.
And Marie, is it all right to acknowledge a person called Waikare Komane, who's the founder of the Roots? And I think it's okay to say that he's John Belford's mentor. I'm going to go that far. Sorry, John Belford. But he's
that is correct.
Yeah, you could. He was an architecture student who, as I understand, walked out of architecture school and just there was no way into the industry for him. So he's this wonderfully clever person who found himself unable to get his voice, his face onto the pen in designing the city. So out of that need, he's founded the Roots. And what a wonderful thing for the city. But now the next thing is those people, how do they start telling our city's stories in infrastructure and making sure this is a city that represents all of its people? That's the next round for us, I think. These wonderful, generous people who are ready, how can we make sure the city's got its doors open? That's a pretty critical part of the work, I think.
Yes, and I think creating pathways for young people to be able to see their way into architecture school, see their way into study structures, so they have the practical formal education alongside their creative visions, and they can actually match those two up.
And then into the work, how do they then walk into the workforce and get opportunities to make their way in? Really important.
Really important. What is so incredible is the amount of creative energy in these communities. Yeah. And I think the Southern Initiative is a great strategy for unleashing the creativity in the South. And I'm really excited that the youth in Bukit Te Papa are going to benefit as our Youth Connections program works into the Southern Initiative and out into the West. And we link with the processes and the structures and the development that's available then to the young people right across. So that's going to be quite an exciting thing because I can see a lot of richness in our community that can come into play. there's so much work that Waikare and the ones who he's nurtured, who've come after him, like John, she said, there's so much work that's come out of that, and it's groundbreaking, and I think that it's going to inspire things in other parts of New Zealand too. I'm very conscious that Wellington, being a smaller city and everything being more interconnected, there is some richness happening there already, but it's been a much bigger struggle and it's been harder to get all that connectivity going in Auckland. So I think it's something that takes its time, and when you've got momentum, the wave gathers force, and I think something big is going to happen at this point.
Indeed, we're seeing more and more excitement around the peripheral areas of cities and in smaller cities and towns, because these are cities that people can shape. That especially younger people can if they feel like they can shape it, if they see themselves in the future of it, whether it's shaping a business or a public space or adding to the cultural life of a city. That's when attachments made. We're finding that. People are choosing a place before a job now, and it's this lovable cities that are really going to win most in the future. It's not just the livable city. We want livability for people, but we're finding these lovable places, the more informal places like on the waterfront, those are the places that generate attachment, that generate the stories, the memories, that build on the history and respect the history, but also create new culture and identity that can really set cities apart. And ultimately has a real economic importance. Those are the places that draw talent, draw out the talent of people there, attract new talent, attract investment in people to come to their communities in ways that respect local culture and add to that culture as well.
That's a very powerful statement, and it reminds us that, this is not just an airy-fairy conversation. This has actually economic benefits, and those benefits are quantifiable. So Auckland has a great future, and it is a very interesting city because it has a young population as well as an ageing population. So on this note, I would like to say thank you for participating today, because it's been a really interesting time to actually get the two of you together and to have this conversation. It's a luxury for me, and I very much appreciate it, and thank you for coming in and participating today, and wish you well for the rest of Placemaking Week.
Thank you. And Rev, it's all right to also thank Palmerston North City Council and Christchurch City Council, because without them on board this week would not be happening. So just to our cousins to the south, thank you too.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's a national conversation, and of course this is a global conversation as well. We're looking to share the great stories and best practices of New Zealand globally. People are watching this all over the world. There's obviously the stories out of Christchurch and Palmerston North actually already have gotten a lot of global attention, as well as the great leadership from Panuku. But we're doing these global placemaking weeks around the world, often with UN Habitat, and the models that are being developed here I think are going to be very inspiring and replicable to be copied elsewhere.